Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donnie, and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We say hello to President and CEO of the Nashville Convention and Visitors Bureau. Butch Spiridon is on the line with us. Butch, how you doing?
Great. Great. Hey, how come you guys get to work if there's no sports?
Well, there's still stuff to talk about, Butch.
You know,
the show, as they say, the show must go on, my friend.
Yes, it does. And we need you more than ever.
And it has definitely been unique. It's been different. How about on your end?
Oh, unique doesn't do it justice. I have my favorite analogies. One is I have a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle that all the pieces are the same color, and there's no picture on the cover of the box. So that's my one. And then I go into, it feels like a yo-yo. Every day we go up and down, and we're not making any progress. And then I use Robert Williams' description of how the Scots invented golf, and in particular when they stick the little flag in the hole to give you hope, and then they put all kinds of obstacles around that pin so that you really don't have any hope. So those are my descriptives of how I get through every day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, talk about uncharted waters.
Well, and you're the perfect guy, Butch, because you've been through all of this stuff. And I do want to get into some of the other things that have happened, because I kind of feel like, you know, the historic flood a decade ago has been kind of lost in the shuffle with all of this. And certainly, you know, recognizing what – but the point is our city has been through, you know, bad stuff. It's had to – the rebuild and tornadoes and everything. But I do want to ask you where cause you've been when this city in 1998 downtown was completely different, and then trying to get big events and, hey, you need to build a new convention center. You've been through all the layers of Nashville, and to now you've been able to reap all of this and see, you know, every big event and this explosion. And now to see it come to a screeching halt, how has it affected, you know, the hotel industry and just everything that you're wrapped around and all the people that you talk to? How has it affected everything the last couple of months?
You know, the biggest impact and the jaw-dropping is just the number of people out of work. And that honestly eats at me every day. Mm-hmm. Because we know how to recover. And we know we can get back, and we know we need to put people back to work. So not being able to start is really hard, because you're maybe even one more analogy. Jim Valvano, after that NCAA championship, where he's running around the court looking for somebody to hug, maybe that may be how I feel. I'm running around looking for somebody to hug and somebody to bring to town, and we can't.
Yeah.
So you keep preparing, knowing there will be an opportunity, but the frustration mounts where you feel almost helpless at times.
How difficult has it been to talk? This is what everybody's had to, you know, these sports leagues, everybody's having to talk about, well, you've got these monster events. And how tough it is to you when you get to that point of, okay, we've got to, you know, we've got to cancel CMA Fest. These things that are so critical for this. How tough are those meetings? I mean, you've got, you know, we know how big July 4th is in this city. How tough are those conversations? And also, how tough is it to try to get in there and also say, okay, if we can move forward on, let's say, this event, how do we, or opening things back up, how do we go about doing things differently? Because we can't just open it up and it'd be the same. How, you know, how difficult and challenging are those meetings?
Oh, well, there's no blueprint. There's no roadmap. And there's a whole new set of dynamics on top of all the old dynamics that haven't gone away. Public safety, max security, just all the things you deal with on any big event. And now you have a whole other layer of things you have to think about that nobody's ever thought about before. So you're making it up, and you're trying to think of everything. And now you're consulting health department officials in the medical profession that you never did before. So it really is, how can we be the smartest? How can we be the most creative? And how can we be the safest in implementing whatever it is that's next? And it's mind-boggling. But I'm, I don't like to lose. And, personally, I won't go down without a fight. So we're swinging for the fence, and we're planning on what the new normal looks like, and we're still selling. We just closed the big convention for January of 22 this past Friday. I can't talk about the name of the group because they're not ready to announce, but over 5,000 rooms per night. Well, January of 22 may seem far away, but not in our world. That's a big win for this city. That does give you a little of that hope. And the ACM awards that we announced a week ago that are going to be here in September. You know, the next for me is hoping, working, making it safe that we can have fans attend those awards, and we're not doing a show that's just a TV show. But it's two steps forward and either one or three steps backwards every time we make a move.
We're talking to Butch Spiridon from the Convention and Visitors Bureau in Nashville, and a unique position to be in the times that we're in right now. So, Butch, when you're looking down the road and you're thinking about maybe stages of this, and you mentioned conventions, which is a big one, what are the discussions like about, okay, we might be able to have a convention at some point if we do it in a certain way where it's not where we have distancing within the convention? And the facilities that you have available to that. I would imagine those conversations are fascinating because these groups want to have conventions for sure, but of course they want to keep everybody safe.
On the association side, their conventions are their second biggest revenue stream. So they need to have them as soon as they can. So now the conversation becomes, if you have a trade show, one-way aisles, just like the grocery store. So people are moving in one direction, letting in a limited amount of people at any one time. If you were going to have a general session for 5,000 people, maybe you're having three general sessions for 1,600 people each so that they can be spread out. And then, we're talking to hotels and centers and exhibit companies about, heat cameras and heat mags and thermometers and masks and all those things that we all talk about daily, but on this exponential side. Opryland is a great example, and really Music City Center. They can't open and function with 50% capacity. It doesn't work for a 2,800-room hotel to only sell, 1,400 other rooms. Or a ballroom that holds 5,000 people to only let 600 people in it. So it's just, it's a yin and yang of what do we know, what works from a safety. If everybody's wearing masks and gloves, does that allow us to do a little bit more? If everybody's temperature has been taken, it just, every answer brings up 10 more questions.
Answers
are a little longer than.
Yeah, I think from a sports angle, we're all wondering this as well. We were reading about Major League Baseball hoping at some point that they could let a few thousand people in the stands in a big 40,000-seat stadium, for example. And so what's the right amount? How would you do it? And you just hit on a lot of the logistical questions that come up is, how do you track it? And so we're hoping that these kind of things speed along, because I think we're coming to the conclusion. We know the virus is not going to go away. It's so what measures can you put in to make it as safe as possible? And what's the right balance between ramping things up a little bit more, but staying safe enough?
Yeah, you have. And for me, I assume I'm pretty normal in this. You have the desire to get back to normal and do some normal things, but you have to have that be measured with safety practices, safety protocols, and measures that you can take so that we're not making everything worse for the long haul, the short-term pain versus the long-term benefits. I think it's where everybody is. And kind of with conventions and with the major sports, somebody's going to have to go first, and somebody's going to try it. If I had to guess right now, as much as anything, because it's fall, I give the NFL probably odds on to get as close to getting something right, because they're smart, they have the money, they have the time, and the resources to, if anybody can figure out, it's probably them. But maybe that's wishful thinking, too. And I hope it's for all the sports, but that seems to make the most sense. It's also outdoors. That makes a difference. But how do we figure it out, and how do we put some normalcy in our lives?
We're talking to Butch Spirit, and that leads me into my question of the NFL is supposed to announce their regular season schedule later this week, and they're operating under the assumption that they're going to go on as scheduled, go on as planned with their regular season. I have to imagine that that's something that you all are paying close attention to with the amount of people that the Titans bring in every year for visiting fans coming in, and with the revenue that can be generated from an NFL weekend.
Well, invaluable to all the NFL cities on so many levels. You know, the TV coverage, the sense of normalcy, and in a case like Nashville, there are a handful of NFL cities that do great with traveling, visiting fans. We're one of them. So it's a big shot in the arm economically for us, kind of like New Orleans, maybe Green Bay. There just aren't a lot of cities that get the traveling fan like we do. Some of that has to do with available tickets, which the Titan fan of me hopes there's a few less tickets available. But we also need the visitor spending back in this city. There's a lot of jobs on the line.
Butch, how do you guys address, events that were scheduled through this time? I mean, conventions and all of that are now being postponed, or have there been conversations about, okay, we'll just move it back a year? I know that's hard to do because you schedule so many things years in advance. So have you been handling some of those situations?
Great question. First, anything we could attempt to save if it canceled, we went right to work on it. The biggest roadblock for us is we've been so successful selling into the future that we don't have a lot available dates and space. So everybody first tried to, can we move it a year? That's been really hard. So with groups that canceled, we have now gone to, well, if you'll rebook in year two or three, we'll minimize or eliminate the penalties that came with canceling. So we're looking a little further out. Then there's the case of, I'll use the marathon. Marathon would like to reschedule, but they can't pick a date until we have the Titan schedule. So kind of goes back to every time you think you have an answer, there's another domino in the way that you got to knock down. So hopefully we get that schedule this week, and then we can go back to the marathon and try to salvage it for the fall, which would be a huge hit. In terms of a good hit for the city. We're chasing literally everything we can chase. and not taking no for an answer, if there's any way not to take no for an answer.
Last thing, I brought this up with Predators General Manager David Poile on Friday when he joined us. Just I brought it up at the beginning. Kind of lost in the shuffle is not something we necessarily want to, you know, glorify, because it was horrible to experience it, but it is a part of this city's history, and that's the historic flood of a decade ago that, you know, happened over this week. May 1st was, I think, the beginning, the first day of that happening a decade ago. When you think about the sites, you know, what Nissan Stadium, I know it wasn't called Nissan Stadium then, what that looked like then, the Bridgestone Arena and downtown and Opryland, what do you remember the most about that 10 years ago, Butch?
Looking at downtown from the roof of the Hilton and just thinking, this is way worse than I thought. And I'm not sure how we recover from this. And as soon as I got that in my head, then we immediately shifted to failure's not an option. We've got to dig ourselves out of this. And we started, I think I was downtown Monday, and on Tuesday we were meeting and putting plans together. And the biggest difference is with that, you kind of knew there was, you knew what the damage was, essentially, and you knew there was an end. And this virus, you keep looking for the end, so you know where to start. And that, if you let it get to you, it's pretty depressing and pretty demoralizing. So you have to keep that beast out of sight and keep focusing on, there will be a treatment. There will be a vaccine. There is life after this. We are smart people, and we are going to get through it. And we, you know, tornadoes in theme park in 98, 9/11 in 2001, recession and flood. We are seasoned. We are smart. We are resourceful. And we can do this. This one's a little harder, but not it can be conquered, maybe a better way to say it.
Yeah. Well said. Thanks for the visit, as always. Good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Always good to catch up with you guys. Keep the faith and keep the sports light burning.
That's what we're trying to do every day. that's our mission.
Love it.
Thank you, Butch.
Thank you.
Butch Spiridon, he is the president and CEO of the Nashville Convention and Visitors Bureau. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday afternoon. Appreciate Butch Spiridon for joining us. Good stuff from him. I thought that was well said. Putting things in perspective, the most challenging thing about this is, you know, the uncertainty is you have so many questions that you can't get answered right now. And to his point about the flood, you know, it started on a Saturday, and Sunday everybody was fully aware of how bad it was. And by Monday, you know, you're starting to figure out, okay, what's the game plan, right? What's the game plan to get past this, repair,
right,
and move on? The rain had stopped and the sun was out, and that it was over when it came to, you know, the flood. But now we got to figure out how to get out of this, and, you know, what is it going to look like? Where this, there is no, there's no end game right now, right? And so you're constantly, there's always constantly moving parts. And so that's what makes it a lot more challenging.
Yeah, just like the tornado would sort of have the same thing. Hey, it was devastating, but let's start the road to recovery, and every day it's going to get a little better. This is, boy, did Butch ever lay out the challenges facing him in his unique position of, you know, visitors, tourism. It's a big part of our overall makeup as a city, right? We want people coming in, having a great time. How many hours have we spoken about that in sports and non-sports? But, you know, it's a tough, tough picture to try to figure out. And I think that's the thing every day that I keep thinking about is, you know, we know the virus isn't going away. So what can we do to deal with the virus and still function as much as we can, keeping people safe, but finding ways to function. I think that's the next thing that we've got to do. And it's not an easy challenge, for sure.
I mean, that's the million-dollar question that a lot of people are trying to find the answer to, of how can we – because we can't just stop. I mean we've done that. We've paused, but we can't keep doing that. So how do we function until they find some sort of cure or vaccine for the virus? That's what a lot of people smarter than us are trying to figure out, and that's the hard part, because we're being forced to a point where we have to keep going. We have to keep we have to start reopening, but how do we do it without knocking ourselves back? You know, I thought Butch saying, like he said it, that we'll get a couple steps forward and then get knocked three steps back. That's what we're trying to prevent.
All right, we haven't had a chance.
What I think we've got to have the advancing of the testing, the tracking, the tracing. That would help make the picture a little clearer to people like Butch, I think. That's where I really hope we have breakthroughs there, and treatments and things like that that can help us really identify who can get back in there and who can go into the workforce and who needs to stay on the sidelines here until we get a full-on vaccine.
Yep. We haven't had a chance to talk about The Last Dance, episodes 5 and 6 last night. So what did you guys think?
Well, it was right up at the standard that we've come to expect, right? Compelling from start to finish. I thought it was outstanding. The Tony Kukoc story was very compelling. It's been well told before. The compelling story of Michael Jordan, and I think this was probably the biggest thing that my wife Erin got really, really enjoyed, just the weight of being Michael Jordan every day. The shots of the overhead camera of him in a media scrum after just a regular practice, right? Just the dozens of people surrounding him with a microphone extended somewhere. Just unbelievable. Every single place he went, every single day, trying to get a moment's peace there, and how he delivered under those circumstances. That was really, really good stuff.
Him in the hotel room.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That summed it all up, right? I mean, him just sitting there doing nothing in the hotel room, and he basically was saying, you know, this is paradise. I got nothing. I don't have to deal with anything. Things get to be quiet, and I can just sit without. I mean, it is amazing. And the minute he would walk out of the hotel room, you know, it becomes a circus every step of the way until he's out of the limelight again, right? I mean, just walking through the hotel, walking to the bus, to and from the bus, walking to and from arenas. It was constant. It never ended. The airport, right? It's just everything. And what that must be like, and how exhausting that must be. And oh, by the way, it's already exhausting enough trying to get through a regular season schedule and through the playoffs in the NBA. But that's all, you know, all that is around him. All those circumstances are what else he had to deal with, and that team. It's pretty amazing. There were a lot of things that jumped out to me. I thought, you know, it was really good. Again, you know, I don't understand why everybody feels so sorry for Tony Kukoc. Like, oh, that was so unfair that Michael's. So what? I mean,
I thought he really handled it well. I thought, Kukoc,
but you could tell he was a little bitter about it, though.
Little bit, but I think he was like, well, what? He goes, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything.
Right.
You know.
I
think it came around, right? I think it ended better. I think he earned the respect of those
guys. Well, he earned their respect. It's like, okay, yeah. So they took it out on their general manager and, you know, took it out on you because of their general manager. So deal with it, you know. But you're supposed to be this great European player, so what's your response? And that's what he did, and he got their respect because of that. But all the people are like, it was so unfair for them to treat Tony Kukoc like that. And just, you know, Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan just made it a personal agenda on Kukoc because of Jerry Krause. Well, who cares?
It was probably the best thing that could have happened.
Yeah, I agreed. I totally agree. It's, what do you think Michael Jordan did his whole career? I mean, Michael Jordan, is he not the same guy that went into the Hall of Fame how many years later after playing high school basketball and brought up being cut in ninth grade? It's like, what was everybody's reaction? Like, Michael, like, really? Haven't you moved on from that? No, that's how he's wired. That's his driving force. That's what gets his juices flowing. He's got to have something to push him. And so he's going to find it. If it wasn't Tony Kukoc, it was going to be somebody else. Jerry Krause has brought up, right? I mean, he was always going to be looking for a driving force to keep him motivated. That's how that cat was wired.
I think Jerry Krause deserves, you know, all the credit that Jerry Krause is looking for. That could
for
be
just
biggest...
being him? For being yeah, Jerry that, Krause?
Seriously, that could be the guy brought that up this morning. And I'll ask you guys of, you know, I think that team was good, obviously. I mean, they're a dynasty, but do they have some of the success and achieve some of the things that they did if there isn't that animosity within the organization of Jerry Krause pushing and he may not even been a part of his plan. I don't
oh,
think
he
it
wasn't
was,
pushing.
But,
he was just being him.
Right. But
he was being himself, but he ended up being a motivator. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think, as it's been pointed out in many examples, Michael Jordan was going to find something to drive him and motivate him. It didn't matter necessarily what it was. It was just maybe a, you know, Kobe Bryant at the All-Star game, you know, just being young and maybe not appreciative of how the league works, and so we're going to make it, we're going to take it to him tonight. It was so many different things, right, that got him going. Just somebody predicting against them. So that also drives it a big character trait of Jordan that they got in on some, but I thought a lot about our Sam Smith interview last week because this was the episode that the book came out.
Yep.
And the gambling thing was covered some, but remember what Richard Deitch told us. Michael Jordan is the executive producer, so they handled the gambling thing fairly delicately, wouldn't you say? Didn't really get into a
yeah,
whole lot of detail
it,
what
though.
Was going on. They addressed
yeah,
it to a degree.
But Michael Jordan is the one. Remember, he's got his hands all over this, so he's not going to let it truly get. Yeah, they've gone to a little bit deeper dive, but you're never going to get the full story.
I want to hear David Stern somewhere in this say that, you know, his first retirement had nothing to do with gambling. That's and I know
we'll see what happens in the next episode.
Right, that's what they're going to get into.
That's where they left off. But mm-hmm. David Stern did have a quote in there saying he chose his words very carefully. If you remember, he said it never rose to a crisis level, or something like he was bouncing around trying to find the right words, and he said it never rose to a big enough crisis level that we had to really step in. I guess because I think a big narrative was he made so much money that whatever debts he might have compiled,
right,
even
that's,
if it was
which
with
is
some
silly.
Shady guys, he could write the check and cover
but
it.
But that's his justification,
debt.
Right? Like that's he's saying, yeah. I don't have a problem as long you don't become it to me. What I took from
problem.
It is I don't have a problem until I can't pay my debts. That's when I have a problem, yeah. Right? As long as I keep paying off my debts, then I don't have a problem.
I wonder what people who study gambling addiction would say, like experts would.
I don't know. That's a great because right. That's when we. That's why I've always said like stop. You know, some of the words we use it's just so ridiculous. But people, you know, what is too much? Is it just because you're right? We do. What he's saying is actually probably factually true, like how we
– Yeah, yeah,
you know,
I think so.
Our perception is you are what's some terms you hear thrown around that you've heard me kind of rail on, like what you say, you know, about people who gamble? What do you call them? People who drink, right?
It's important
these catchphrases.
To point out.
Crutch – What are you trying? Yeah. I don't know where you're going.
But it's
with this.
Important to point out that we've seen some pretty high level sports figures that make a lot of money. I mean, not as much as Jordan did relatively, but tons of money, who have compiled some pretty big debts that still owe the money. Right? The people who've gotten some big time hot water. Phil Mickelson comes to mind at one point
yes.
in his career.
Charles Barkley?
So guys in every sport. Yeah. Oh,
and Barkley, I don't know if you guys saw his.
I think it was another one, was a famous gambler behind the scenes that was racking up big debts for a while. And so, you know, I guess, so Jordan has got something there. I just wonder what experts would say there.
I don't know if you guys saw it.
The word I was looking for that I thought you guys did, I don't guess you didn't understand. You know, we all, degenerates, right? You're a degenerate. Yeah. Well, you're a degenerate gambler. What does that mean? I feel like the term is thrown out. And same thing, the other word is, you know, people, just a bunch of drunks. Oh, so just people who drink, they're drunk. No, it's, so the degenerate gambler is, we would, the connotation would be, oh, that they can't pay off their debts, right? They don't have the money, but yet they keep gambling. And that's kind of what I felt like he was trying to say is, look, I'm not a degenerate gambler. I can pay off all my losses. Even though everything I do is gambling.
Fantastic.
Right? I mean, that's
kind
what
of a
I
cocky
felt.
Cocky way to look at.
I could, right, but I could, you know, that's what I felt listening to him talk about that. And look, it's once again, it's how that cat is wired. He is wired where everything must be a competition. That's why I said when you threw out earlier, be like Mike. Like, I don't really know if anybody can be like Mike. I just think that's like its own separate category. There's middle ground because he is the rare. There are very few people wired like that. I mean, he is at the highest level of just everything. I mean, you see them playing quarters, and he's with security guards, and he's trying to win.
That was hilarious, wasn't
right?
it?
I mean, that's him.
Where did they find that guy?
That's his downtime.
Awesome. The guy that worked at the United Center?
Sitting at the United Center, that's his downtime before a game is playing quarters with the security guards and trying to beat them.
I had to explain that game to Ryan Porth this morning, by the way, which should surprise nobody.
I was to say, and what that?
Yeah,
we used to do that game with baseball cards.
Tell him there was a movie made about quarters. That wouldn't change the narrative.
That's say, what's that going to do? Think he'll go watch it?
By the way, I thought the 92 Olympic stuff, that footage was fascinating. I thought that was cool.
Did you guys see any of the SVP interview with Charles Barkley afterwards?
I did. I watched it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Chuck was hilarious because he just started repeating himself, and you could tell Scott was like, you're just repeating yourself. But it was still, you know, it was funny because you bring up the gambling part of them talking about Magic and Scotty and Jordan and Charles playing cards together for the Olympics. When they were, you know, playing in the Olympics, they would every night play cards, and Jordan would try and take everybody's money. It wasn't about him winning necessarily. He was going to make sure you lost. That was just he was going to do whatever he could to take your money.
Well, Will Perdue is the one that was telling that story. It was him and BJ Armstrong and Paxton, is that right?
Yeah,
they're playing a dollar a hand.
Playing blackjack, yeah.
And the Michael Jordan came up and said, you know, I want to get in there. And Will said he looked at him, or BJ, one of them said, you don't want in on this. We're only playing for a dollar a hand. And I guess his line was, yeah, but I'm going to make sure your dollar's in my pocket.
Right. That was the competitor, however you want to put it.
I would be curious with some of those players that played repeatedly against him. I'm sure Michael Jordan was a good card player, but at the same time, you know, it's cards. You're not the superior talent in a game of cards, right? You could be a good skilled card player, but I'm sure the people that are, if they're entering into a game with him for thousands of dollars, they probably thought they could hold their own. I wonder if he was up or down in all those card games. What do you think? Can we assume because he's a great competitor, and he's a great basketball player, that he won, that he ended up winning a lot more than he lost?
Well, what did Charles talk about?
I'm just curious.
Which you probably don't understand a lot of the terms, Willie, because you don't.
Yeah, what he kept saying that. So what is
wants,
what was
so
he
what
meaning
he's
by that?
Doing is he's muscling the pot because he's got. In other words, he doesn't care if you're in a cash game. Okay, there are poker tournaments that have set limits, right? But then there's cash games where there is no limit. And that's what they were probably playing was a cash game, which means whatever you've got there the table is what you can bet. So there's no limit. You can just keep. And so what he's basically saying is he had more money than everybody else, so Michael was going to try to buy the pot. It didn't mean he necessarily had the best hand. He was just going to scare you away from betting because you didn't know if he really had something or you weren't willing to risk the price for your hand. Even though you probably had the better hand, you weren't willing to risk the price because there's a chance he may have a better hand, but you're not willing to see. And you can even think in your mind, I bet I've got a better hand, but you're not willing to see at that price, and that's what right. he was talking about. Michael would always try to out-muscle you at the table. He's got the biggest stack, so he's going to try to scare you away. And
nobody's
it didn't matter what he
bluff.
Had. Yeah, yeah, unless you're willing to call his bluff, right. So that's what he was referring to.
Okay.
And we've all played with those type of players, or at least I have.
And Chase, I know a couple.
You have to. We've all played with those, you know, the one that tries to muscle, push everybody around at the table with the biggest stack. In other words, they flex their muscle by saying, I'm willing to spend, and I don't care if I lose it. Are you? And most people are, right? Most people are like, yeah, I love this, but I'm not willing to see what you have because I'm not willing to lose that. And that's all that is. So there you go, Willie. You learned a little bit about gambling.
Okay.
And I'm not surprised that Michael Jordan is a muscle, you know, trying to push people around at a table.
But if he's always doing that, I wonder, did some of his Bulls teammates who were playing at the $1,000 table as opposed to the dollar table, did they lose a ton of money? Like, did they walk around owing? If you're Michael Jordan, would you feel a little bit bad for a guy making, you know, one-tenth of what he was making, you know, walking around owing him $5,000 or whatever the tab might have been? That would have been an interesting dynamic. Like, hey, so-and-so, I'm playing alongside of this guy tonight. He actually owes me $5,000 from the card game on the plane, and he hasn't paid up in 2 weeks.
Bad. No. The only thing he ever sees is trying to win at anything. That's all he cares about. And it's not he doesn't care about, you know, your economic status. If he's playing you for a quarter, if he's playing you for a nickel, if he's playing you for 20 bucks, or if he's playing you for 20,000, it's all the same. He's just trying to beat you. That's how I see him wired. And no, he doesn't have sympathy. If he beat that security guard who makes minimum wage, if he beat him 10 hands in a row, he wouldn't feel sorry for him. He would probably take his money quickly and talk smack to him.
Well, I think he said it by if he's going to play at a dollar table, it's simply about having the dollar. He'll play for whatever. That's what it sounds like.
That yeah, but don't you think one of the things that was great was to hear sort of that smack talk? He has a great ability to talk the trash.
Oh yeah,
and you get to hear some of that in this. It's really funny. Some of it, like when he told Jerry Krause, "Don't grab this victory cigar; it's going to stunt your growth."
Or Matt, how about the story Magic was telling about the practice and that? Magic was talking trash, and Jordan.
Some of the trash talk during that game is priceless.
Yeah,
they all got on the bus and it was quiet. And Magic's the one who broke the ice and said, "Well, I guess we learned not to get him mad."
Yeah,
but like, during the game, too, you could hear the mics, and Michael Jordan, somebody's at the line. I think Magic's at the line or something, and Michael's going, this is the 90s. The 80s are over. This is the 90s. You know, some of the great stuff, because Magic was right in it, too, at the beginning.
Sure.
You know, he was – this that's great stuff. As long as it doesn't cut too deep, that's the beauty of a pickup game. Right? Or any basketball game is good-natured but biting trash talk and, you know, the psychological games that go along with it.
I thought it was interesting to hear Charles Barkley talk about that NBA Finals series. I thought that was pretty neat.
Oh, yeah.
How he said he took responsibility for losing game one, that they were not ready. They were not loose enough. That they were tight. The moment was big, too big.
The moment was too big.
The moment was
that was really compelling.
One.
And I thought, you know, one of the most intense series that I can remember was that 93 series against the Knicks. Right before that, where the Knicks won the first two games at Madison Square Garden, they had the home court advantage. And I remember at the time thinking, okay, this is what Pat Riley was hoping for. He's got the one seed. They don't have to win a game at the United Center. You never got the feeling that the Knicks could win in Chicago, but you did feel like they could find a way to win four at Madison Square Garden. So that play with Charles Smith, where he goes up four different times with the ball, that what an amazing play that was. I remember just thinking, what a crushing loss, because I was rooting for the Knicks at the time. I could not believe that last play.
You mean being up 2-0 in a series and losing four straight?
But you knew they were going to lose games 3 and 4 in Chicago. That was almost a given. They couldn't come close to winning Chicago. The key was the game 5 back in Madison Square Garden, whereas if they pull that off, and they had the lead the whole game, right? Then they go up 3-2. They probably lose game 6 in Chicago. Then they get to come back to Madison Square Garden in game 7, and that's what you were wondering. You know, what would that look like? But the Bulls found a way to come back and steal that game 5, and then you're like, it's over. It's over.
Yep. Let's go to Kathy. She wants to weigh in. Kathy, what's up?
Hey, I have a couple funny stories. I worked for the Orlando Cubs back when Jordan was playing with the Birmingham Barons. And so, of course, we had to provide like a little extra security. Well, the bus pulled up onto the paddock so that they could put up the barriers for them to come in and out of the locker room to go to inside the locker room. Well, a kid asked another, Willie, you can appreciate this, asked one of the other minor league players if they would get Jordan to sign his baseball for him. And the player said, no, I won't. It was kind of funny the way he said it. He just looked at the kid and shook his head and said, no.
Yeah, it's probably like, I've heard that like every single time we go to another town. Some kid asked me to do that. I'm sure that was rolling through his head.
And then the last one is this woman, the bus was backing out. They were leaving. They were getting ready to leave. And this woman had a camera and a baseball in each hand. And she was running after the bus. And she was going, Michael, Michael, just yelling, Michael. And I said, ma'am, what exactly do you hope to accomplish? I said, do you think he's going to stop the bus and get jump right on off and sign your baseball?
Isn't that amazing? And you know that went on everywhere.
Yes, it did. But he came a couple of times when he was with the Barons to Orlando. And it was just hilarious the way – I mean, we sold out those games. We were a big-time fella.
Man. I spent a lot of days there, Kathy, at Tinker Field.
Yep. You would appreciate this too, Willie. Do you know that Frank Viola's parents own season tickets to Tinker Field? It used to be the Sun Rays and then the O-Rays and then became the Cubs.
Yeah. Well, I watched Frank Viola pitch because the Twins were Orlando in AA, mm-hmm. and then they had their spring training there for a long time.
When he was with the Mets, he came and I think he was on a rehab, but he was doing some sort of scouting. He was sitting behind the plate, and he had a gun or something. He was there. But his parents were fantastic, great people, really loved him. But we had players come through there like Doug Glanville and Ryan, he was a second baseman for the Cubs. He came and did a rehab stint there. Ryan Sandberg, he came and did a rehab. We had great players like that came through there.
That's the cool thing about the minors.
I wonder what Michael Jordan was like day to day, hitting 201 or whatever it was. I was amazed that if you look back, I can't remember what his average was that season. It was something like 201. It was over 200.
Yeah, it was 201.
I was impressed that at AA he could hit 200. I thought there was no way he could do it. But at the same time, 200 is a lot of failure out there too. I just wonder what that was like against a lot of people way younger than he was. That probably on certain days completely dominated him. I wonder what that was like for him to experience.
We'll come back and wrap up Monday's show next. Hey, do you own or manage a small business? I didn't say that correctly, but we had first time on Friday we introduced this, and it was a success, and we would like to make it a bigger success if you do indeed own or manage a small business. If you're safely open, you want to let people know about that, we've got Free Business Friday. And it is, like I said, really cool that we unveiled this past Friday, and we would love to have even more people be a part of it. So this Friday, again, we're going to be offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. It's no cost to you. There's no catch to any of this. All you have to do is visit our website, thegamenashville.com/ FBF, Free Business Friday, FBF, for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. It's a really cool initiative, and we hope a lot of you take advantage of this. So I brought up that I finished Waco. I was going to start something new over the weekend. Willie, you informed us that you finished Waco as well. We have started
I finished Waco.
And you finished, yeah, that's right. You finished, all three of us now have finished it. I started up Peaky Blinders over the weekend. I'm two episodes in. And so far, mixed bag. I'm not sure whether I like it or not. I liked episode two much more than episode one. Episode one, I felt lost most of the way. But I feel like I'm starting to figure it out.
You got to lay the groundwork. You've laid the groundwork. It'll come around for you. I promise.
I'm figuring things out definitely after two episodes. The second episode, I started connecting a lot of dots. So hopefully episode three will be even better. That's kind of where I am.
Stay with it. Just stay with it. It'll deliver.
People said Ozark started off slow. I never had that feeling. I was in from the minute, from jump. Like, everybody's like, give it a couple of episodes. I wasn't that way with Ozark. I kind of feel like I've needed a couple episodes for Peaky Blinders. I feel like, you know, I'll get, now that I'm starting to figure things out, I hope that it'll get better. Definitely after episode one, I was looking around going, I'm not sure what I just watched. I'm not sure what I even understand what the heck's going on, but after the second episode, I started connecting a lot of dots and going, okay. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But
You got to love the acting, though. The characters in there, so good, I think. Arthur Shelby, you cannot go. I mean, he is the man. Watch out for Arthur. The older brother.
Okay, it's not Thomas.
Thomas is the guy that runs the show.
Right.
And he's brilliant.
He's the main
Cillian
character.
Murphy. He is a tremendous actor, I think, in this character. And I think that's what really makes the show, is the compelling, the villains, you know, in the different forms, I think are really, really good. They'll start adding more guys. You got to just learn the families and the factions in the gangs. And once you do, it'll make perfect sense. And then it's like The Godfather.
Yeah, it's starting to get that feel.
Has Grace come in there yet?
Grace.
The blonde woman who kind of came in. She's the singer.
Yeah, yeah, working at the bar.
Oh,
but she's working undercover for the police chief or whatever he is.
Oh, yeah, don't go too far with it. Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, they reveal that. I mean, she meets up with
him. No, but that, just watch out. Just watch how that develops. It's awesome.
Because he told, where I left off is he told her, get as close to, do whatever you have to do to get as close to Tommy as you can. That's where I am through two episodes.
Okay.
So
good.
Yeah.
All right. So what's the final report on Waco now that we've all watched
it? I gave it a thumbs up. I enjoyed it. I definitely.
You know what? I remember it was my senior year at Vanderbilt. I remember the TV being on and coverage of that going on. I didn't know all of the details that was happening and the controversial way that the FBI approached the standoff. I had no idea of any of that stuff. So that was really interesting to watch. And it's still, if you read, you know, historical stuff on that, you know, that's one interpretation, right? But it's based on a couple of books, the FBI guy.
Right. It was,
and
it was Gary's book and
yeah, so the negotiator's book and
what's the
guy's
Thibodeau's
name? Thibodeau from the inside. So you got both perspectives.
Yeah. So good perspective for sure.
Yeah.
And so and then there's other takes on it. There's been a lot of other documentaries on it, but no matter how you slice it, you know, you're thinking, you know, there's no way I'm going to have any sympathy for the people in there because they're a bunch of crazy people.
And
that is true to agree, but you also kind of have a, well, wait a minute.
Right.
Could this have turned out better? Yeah, I think it could have turned out better.
The icky feeling. Yeah, the icky feeling
of
the FBI and the ATF. Yeah, no doubt. But overall, I gave it two thumbs up. I really enjoyed it.
So did I. I was fired up when I got done with it, of like, this all could have been prevented somehow.
You think? Like today, that would never fly, right? Like, there's no way.
And a lot of things, a lot of things changed because of that, event. So
you think that you think they could actually? I don't know. I don't think that could have happened today. I think that was 1993.
That's what I mean. I think a lot of policy, and there were a lot of different things that were taken away from that.
Yeah. It is closing time. We are going to call it a day. Good stuff. Really appreciate some of the great guests that we had on, going down memory lane. Trey Wingo was fantastic at noon. Vince setting up the scene in Knoxville right now. Jeremy Pruitt and the coaching staff crushing it right now with the number three recruiting class for 2021. So UT getting it done on the recruiting trail. Tron Davenport talking a little Titans with us. And then you heard Butch Spiridon kind of telling us where we are right now. All right. Be safe. Enjoy the weather today. Maybe some bad weather through the night. Just pay attention to it. We want you back here with us safe and sound tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.